Doesn't matter. We'll cut all of this.
We're cutting all of that.
This will all be redacted.
Redacted, redacted, redacted.
Hi.
Hi. This is Rant and Review, where we rant about current events and then review a culturally relevant topic and give it a completely arbitrary rating. I'm Allison.
And I'm Katie.
And this week we will be reviewing Representation.
Reclaiming my time. What he failed to tell you was, when you're on my time, I can reclaim it.
Who's our guest this week, Katie?
Our guest this week is very relevant, obviously, which we say every week because otherwise it wouldn't make sense.
Otherwise our show would just be a random
Dada podcast. Dada cast. Okay.
Kind of an interesting kind of cool concept,
kind of cool kind of cool. We'll think about that. Ooh, we'll ruminate.
Dada. Dadas.
Our guest this week is Washington State Senator from the 34th District, Senator Joe Nguyen.
So we'll get into our conversation with him a little bit later.
How's it going, Katie?
Good. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I'm really tired today.
Like, I don't know why. I feel like this week I just can't wake up.
Are we like existentially tired from all of the thrashing on the nonstop media news cycle?
Maybe that's it. I also think just like the weather change, you know,
it's been raining.
It's been rainy, darker. Do you have anything to rant about?
Not really. I mean, I kind of am like you, like I'm just like tired and like I like don't like when it gets dark. I think I'm going to get a UV light for my desk.
Oh, a happy light. I need one too. Yeah. Because I actually really need that.
Yeah, I really need one this year.
We don't turn the lights on in my office because it's only fluorescent and it's really just not good.
Yeah.
So my office, when it's dark outside at all, it's like very dark in my office. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I'm like, I need some kind of something in here.
Yeah.
Although the happy light, the light is so blue, it's kind of like jarring.
Ooh. Oh, I don't know what the blue, I guess I don't know the specific one you're talking about.
By blue, I mean white.
It's like so white that
bright
it's
bright white.
Right.
It's not like a soft glow like that.
Right.
Like a yellowish glow.
The lighting in my house, I need like more lamps as well. Oh god,
the lighting in my house as well. It's fucked, as you can see.
My lighting is really fucked. Like the bedroom is like a weird gross yellow that makes everything yellow. Like I have white a lot of white bedding and it makes it like ugly.
Just get different bulbs, it sounds
yeah, I do need different bulbs.
I forgot I had a little thing to rant about.
What is it?
Okay, so there's this person in my office who seems to pay a little bit too much attention to like my comings and goings. You know what I mean?
I really cannot stand this.
And
is it a person in a position of power?
No.
Okay, that's one thing. And then there's another thing if it's like your boss right. or someone that's like a senior person.
Which is like also annoying, but like slightly more valid, I suppose. I mean,
in 2019.
So the reason that it's really
in this economic climate, I cannot believe this person is not a boss. Like the fact that they're paying attention, this is definitely a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
In the office.
It's really, and it's, at first I thought
are they commenting?
Yeah, but oof. Like in a passive aggressive way.
Oh my god.
Like basically saying like, oh, you seem to leave early sometimes.
Yeah.
Because okay. So the other thing,
it's even shocking to me that someone would comment though.
But
like I even just get annoyed at like a vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, this person is
a narc.
There's a narc in the office.
Yeah.
This is like such an issue, and I feel like most of the time it's just from being bitter. Like either you're okay, like,
but it's self-imposed is what I don't understand about it, because our work culture on our team is ultra flexible.
And right.
Everyone on my team, like I said, has an established day that they work from home every week.
Yeah.
Like mine's Friday.
And it's also, it's good when it feels authentic.
Yeah.
Like sometimes people say that. And then they're like, oh, but we actually do care. Like they're like, you can make your own hours, blah, blah, blah. And it's like fake.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, this is weird.
And they just say that in the interview because they want
to hire people,
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone in Europe is working 4-day work week,
6 hours a day. Okay, so I think,
and then they have higher productivity.
I know. Well, because it makes fucking sense if you're not just filling time to fill time.
Also, it would be more productive if we had midday naps, which I really endorse. Yeah,
truly.
Yeah, as I've like gotten older, I realized like there's always these people on teams that you have to kind of overmanage. Like, you have to manage
just like
them.
As a coworker.
Yeah. Like, they're needy coworkers. Yeah. And like, and to be honest, it ranges. Like, it's like for this person, they really care about like this weird hours thing. Mm-hmm. For another person, it's like you have to like chat with them about whatever pet, like their like little, whatever topics they, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You have to be like, oh, I'm going to talk to you for 20 minutes about your dating. Cause I know that will make you happy and get off my back about some random thing or whatever.
I would rather that. I would love to talk about that.
I'm just saying, like, you know, it's these things that you have to, like, navigate, like, in an office where you're like, okay. Well, like,
let's talk about how weird offices
are so
are. Because it's like you're just mashing a bunch of people who, like, otherwise wouldn't know or care about each other.
Well, some are more disparate than others. I mean, I've been, though, I mean, definitely the most awkward office I've been in was, like, every person was completely different than the other person. Like, whoever was doing the hiring, all different people probably at different times or whatever, never thought about it. Like, where they were like, oh, we don't care if anyone literally can get along with anyone else. Yeah.
Well, like,
or another weird thing is, like, there's, like, buddies. Like, there's, like, two people that are, like, really good friends, and then everyone else is, like, that's super fucked up.
I don't know. I mean, I...
office culture is annoying.
Yeah, let's stop talking about it. I'm over it.
Do you have any thoughts on impeachment?
Other than great, no. I mean, I've been listening to like...
Great, please do your job.
Yeah,
just do it. Thanks.
I've been listening to all the
recaps.
All the recaps.
I know. There were like I was like, okay, now I'm going to listen to The Daily. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to listen to What Next.
Yeah,
now I'm
going to listen to The Weeds. Now 538
has three episodes.
Exactly. Yeah, and I've listened to literally all of it.
Yeah.
So...
And they all say the same thing.
I feel really caught up. They're like, yeah, this looks really bad. And there's kind of... I mean, it's just like...
Except for Nate fucking Silver. Okay. Who, for some... Actually, I need to rant about Nate fucking Silver.
I cannot stand him.
Pissing me the fuck off. Why? In every scan... Every fucking thing that could happen, literally, Trump... Here's the new phrase.
Yeah.
Instead of saying Trump could shoot someone in Fifth Avenue and no one would do anything, Trump could shoot someone in Fifth Avenue and Nate Silver would be standing right next to them being like... I don't think this is gonna move the needle. That is literally the new fucking thing, because he literally says it after everything that happens, no matter what, and it pisses me the fuck off. Like, I'm so sick of his like favorite thing to say is like, well, public opinion doesn't really support this, right? Like, that's like his like whatever. And I'm like,
what public opinion? Like, he is a statistician or whatever.
Statistician.
That's that right? A dumb word.
Statistician.
Why is there an extra is in there?
Isn't that it?
Why wouldn't you be just a statistician, like a statistician, like a physician?
Yeah, statistician.
Ugh, I hate that. Whatever. Statistician.
I mean, I listened to a really good, I would really recommend, highly recommend there's a podcast, Citations Needed. Adam K. Johnson, I think, is his name, from New York, and someone else. I can't remember their name. But anyway, Citations Needed. They did an episode about Nate Silver, but mostly about like punditry and how it's like so toxic. This like pundit brain that's like totally this like vapid, like, I'm not going to actually talk about what I feel about this thing. I'm going to cloak it in stats and data, but actually it is my feeling, and my feeling is very centrist and very moderate and very like, because it is his feelings.
I see.
He is still talking about his feelings,
right? Because every time he's like, public opinion doesn't support this, I'm like, what public opinion? Like, everything that we're seeing everywhere is saying this is what people want.
And the hilarious part is, like, literally all the polls like in the last week have been like wildly moving to support more, right? For some reason he's not responding to that. I mean, he wasn't on the very last episode, but like, I'm just saying, like, honestly, the episodes without him, I'm like,
thank God.
I don't know if it's just his need to like be a naysayer, but some of the things he says, I'm just, I don't understand even the data behind it. Right. What he's saying.
Well, and like you're saying, I don't think there is data behind it.
Yeah.
Like, I think he selectively chooses data
right.
to support his position.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's not very useful as a statistician.
I mean, for this to happen,
mm-hmm.
it reminds me of the New York Times. It's like this crazy shit happens and then he gets on a podcast and says, I think Democrats might regret some of this. Like, oh, I don't know. They just seem to be behind public opinion on this and mm-hmm. just this like weird. It's like, who the fuck needs this?
It also guides political strategy.
Right.
So right. So it's fucked up, actually.
That's the fucked up part about pundit brain.
Yeah.
That's what they talk about on Citations Needed. It's like you're guiding the commentary, mm-hmm. which is guiding people's thoughts about right. what it is, right? Well, you are in the media. You're not just a statistician. You're in the media. You're commenting right? And I'm sorry for him to be like, Democrats should be careful about impeachment because a public opinion is fucking insane.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, and all the polls,
galaxy brain idiot.
Yeah. All the polls say that people support impeachment. So it's like literally it doesn't even make sense. Does not compute.
Yeah, I mean, you have like literally like CNN, MSNBC going the fuck off. Like, obviously this is breaking a law. They have like every expert, right? Every analyst on there. They have legal scholars. They have all of these like people saying, yes, this is like very, very, very bad.
Yeah. And he's blatantly admitted it. And fucking Rudy Giuliani is blatantly admitting it.
Nate Silver and David Brooks basically saying it's a bad idea for the Democrats. Those are the two. It's like,
well, okay.
It's like Nate Silver, Eric Erickson. There's like these like conservative people.
Basing everything on whether it's good or bad for you politically is just self-serving. That's not actually serving the will of the people.
Right.
So just do what's right because it's right. And then you will be rewarded for doing what's right.
People will respond to that. They'll be like, wow, I'm being represented.
Not like, oh, this person constantly changes what they're going to do based on what one person said or what, you know, like.
Yeah. It's not these aren't minor issues. Yeah. It's like our democracy. Like,
right.
It's
at stake.
The most important issues to Americans.
Right.
Like, these things that are happening are fucked.
Yeah.
And to have people be like, I have to weigh my reelection odds against like blah, blah, blah. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're going to go down in history as being a fucking traitor.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not have like a moral and ethical responsibility? Like,
because I think power is corrupting. And so people gain power and then all they can think about is,
but because of our laws right now, they could not get elected and then just get another high paying corporate or lobbying job.
Yeah.
It's like, get the fuck out of politics. Like, that's the thing. Like, Paul Ryan is like over on Fox News's board and he's like, did you see that quote?
Mm-mm.
Well, now that Paul Ryan is on the board of Fox News, he feels that he has power.
Now he has power. That is fucked.
And that's like what it's like. It's like, well, these people shouldn't be politicians. They should be celebrities. They should be on Fox News. They should be like lobbyists. Nudes, they should be working for corporations.
Fox Nudes. Oh my God. Fox Nudes. That needs to be a meme account if I've ever heard one.
Oh God.
Fox News needs to be abolished.
In a week of really fucked up news about national politics, our conversation with State Senator Joe Wen was very uplifting.
Yes.
To me.
Totally agree.
Spiritually, I felt better.
Yeah. Actually, by the end of it, I did.
I actually
feel,
was like, uplifted.
I was like, oh, we can do this.
I felt so, hope.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into our interview then.
Yeah. How was your week? Tell us how your week's been.
It's good. It's
also
busy.
Is it your birthday?
It is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Happy birthday.
I thought I saw that on Twitter.
I know. Sure.
And I was like, is this real?
He said that and I was like, oh God, today. I feel bad he has to be with us on his birthday.
No, it's good. I was actually just at the Puget Sound Business Journal. I'm one of the 40 under 40 for this year as well. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
It's very interesting, right? Like a year ago, I was out door knocking, just trying to fight for a chance to like serve our community. And now I'm running around doing these things that make no sense to me.
Yeah.
And people give me authority that I'm like, you realize I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm in charge of this. Fascinating.
Nice.
This is fascinating. So no, it's good. been a busy week. Got back from Denmark last week. Yeah. So this week has been kind of just catching up. But
what were you doing in Denmark?
I was working with a lot of folks who, you know, it's interesting. It's actually a bipartisan trip that they take for the past couple of years, where you just bring legislators and policymakers to Denmark to study a lot of what they're doing for sustainable development and urban planning. Denmark obviously is very progressive in some of its policies. A lot of it was actually because of the oil embargo back in the 70s. They were highly dependent on oil, and because of that embargo, almost crushed their economy. So ever since then, they've really had some significant efforts to alleviate their dependencies on imported oil, which means they focus on renewables, which means they're focused on sustainable development, waste management, things like that, where we can definitely do that stuff in Washington State as well. So kind of just going over their study and then, you know, checking it out. First time in Europe, food is really good. People are great. I dressed up extra hipster just to like fit in. So it was pretty cool. And I actually spent most of my time hanging out with the Republicans. So it's interesting because in politics, people think it's very divisive, and it is. But you'd be surprised by how much we have in common. And if you guys know my politics, I'm probably the most progressive person in the legislature, if not the second
We've heard the AOC of Washington State, right?
Yeah, and, you know.
That's a lot of, that's a lot to live up to, right?
That's a lot. It's a lot to live up to. Yeah. So no, it's good. So it was just kind of interesting because, you know, the public persona that I probably have is very much like left-leaning firebrand. But the Republicans love me because I'm willing to have that conversation with them. It's not about, you know, agreeing all the time, but it is about making sure that you have those conversations to figure out where you can actually work together.
Yeah.
So you were just saying that you saw a lot of in transportation over there, that because that's been something that we've talked about quite a bit on this show, is like transportation in Seattle and how we can get away from cars, so our dependency on cars. Better. And like I live in the deep south end of King County. And if I don't drive, I'm like frustrated as a, just as like a commuter. I'm frustrated by the fact that like it takes, it's faster for me to use my car versus taking public transportation.
Faster and like the access to transit
is not easy, especially in the south end of King County for equity reasons, I believe. And you look at the initiative happening right now, the Tim Iman initiative trying to gut our infrastructure for transportation, right? Like systemically, it is very hard to get people on the mindset that this is good for everybody because we've done a certain way for so long.
Right.
And in Washington State, we barely have enough money to pay for the potholes, let alone infrastructure that we need drastically to make our situation better, like light rail. I like high-speed rail from Vancouver all the way down to Portland as well.
Can you talk a little bit more specifically about that?
High-speed rail?
No, the bill that Tim Iman.
Oh, I mean, it's one of those.
I mean, kind of all you have to do is say it's a Tim Iman.
I mean, like, that's the gist, right?
But, like, just so if people are curious because they haven't looked into it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm biased, so this is going to be a biased perspective, but he basically wants to cut car tabs, which, you know, I get. That makes sense. It's very visceral. It's pocketbook issues, but I don't really think that somebody who drives a Ferrari should have to pay the same or should be able to pay the same as somebody who is a single mom driving an old car. I think that there are equity issues in terms of how we make sure that we pay for our roads, and I think the folks who can afford it should be paying for it as well. But it's tough. Washington State is very aggressive in terms of how our taxes are being managed, and one of the ways it manifests itself is in our car tabs, and it's very frustrating for people, so I get that. But it's gonna be more frustrating when you have bridges that collapse, or when you have potholes that don't get fixed, when you have transportation like light rail that won't get built because of this. So it's tough because people feel it definitely when they go get the new car tabs, but you're going to feel it not just our generation, but future generations will be impacted by this as well. So we need to make sure that we don't pass 976. But at the same time, how do we build a structure and a society that actually puts people first?
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about that regressive tax structure. We had an episode on housing recently, and that was one of the big pieces of that that came up, which is like, you know, a normal, like everyday, like family or whatever is paying a middle wage income family is like paying a lot more of their, of their income versus as a percentage versus someone who's like a high bracket, you know, high tax bracket.
And the way that we even define what middle income or low income is in Washington State from a legislative perspective is so ridiculous, right? Like if you're, you know, family of four making $40,000, you don't actually really count as super low income. So like the numbers don't really make sense.
That doesn't make sense.
No, not at all. And the frustrating part is that if you look at the way we fund things, so during the, this is kind of a tangent, but during the recession, you know, back in like 2011 and whatnot, They had a gut social services. They had a gut funding for affordable housing. But you know what doesn't get touched? Tax exemptions for large businesses.
Right.
So it's frustrating in that our systemic system, you know, punishes people on the margins and then tries to mitigate that by giving rich people more money, which is doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
And last year, one of my bills, Progressive REIT, I don't know if you guys know what that is, but we help raise money for affordable housing through what's called a Progressive REIT. So whenever you sell a property, you pay a real estate excise tax. It's essentially a sales tax. So we made it more progressive. So properties over $3 million paid more. Properties under 1.1 paid less. And those in the middle kind of stayed the same.
Yeah, I read about it and it seemed like a really smart, you know, simple way that anyone could understand that's like makes a lot of sense. I think what is frustrating to a lot of people is there's these like big structural things like an income tax.
Yeah. Capital gains.
State capital gains. Yeah. Things like that, that or like the head tax fight where people see it this like, you know, really big pool of money sitting there and then
and it can't happen
Jeff for Bezos, whatever reason, right?
Like, that's cool, bro. You're doing just fine. I actually have a wealth inequality bill that I dropped last year right before the budget discussions were had. And what it does, if you're a company that pays people over $1 million a year, right? Like $1 million a year, every single year, there'll be a small excise fee, depending on the numbers, is about 5%, 2 to 5%, in order to help pay for things that we actually need, right? So just guess. So only over $1 million a year, right? How much do you think that would raise in a year? I mean, it's a rhetorical question because you probably don't know. But about $300 million. So only on multi-millionaires.
Right.
There's about 2,200 or so, mostly in King County, actually. So with less
Well, that's the big, like, what is so mind-boggling to people. We have King County. Many rich people.
Yeah.
It's this like tiny, you know, it's a fraction of percentage of people, but they make so much money. And they, so they're like, wait, how do we have these budget gaps? It like makes no sense. Like, we're wealthy. We're
Medina
wealthy, right?
Medina had a budget gap. Right, like the city of Medina.
Like, how are schools not funded, right? Where, it's like crazy.
Where the richest of the richest live, and they don't have enough money to pay for.
I think nationally, people don't realize that Bezos lives in a county where the schools are not funded. It's I mean, people.
I don't blame him. It's just the system that we're in, but it's frustrating. It's wild that we can live in one of the wealthiest cities and the wealthiest nation in the entire world and have issues of funding education. Right, providing social services for folks who need it the most.
Yeah, like the most fundamental level.
The very fundamental level.
Isn't even there. So everything's just like balanced on top of this really wobbly
base. And that's why people get so frustrated with the tax conversations, I think, in Seattle, is because they're kind of getting nickel and dime, but they're doing it because there's no other option. There is no capital gains. There is no income tax.
Right?
Like there's, what, 7 states in the whole United States that don't have either?
And it feels like an issue of like political will to get it done. Cause it's like, I do think, I mean, let's get into a little bit more of like general representation conversation. What does representation look like to you? Cause I think that people feel like, oh, there's these popular things that most people would agree on and they're just not happening.
Being done.
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of it. Yeah. So if you look at the legislature this past year, it was the most legislative body in the history of Washington State. And we almost doubled the number of people of color in the Senate, almost doubled. I think there's 8 of us now, right? Out of 49, right? And obviously all in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Right. And because of that, we're able to do transformative stuff. And if you really dig in and look, really it was 3 people. So 3 people flipped seats from Republican to Democrat, 3, right? Yep.
My district.
Yeah. There you go.
Mona Das.
Yeah. Mona Das, Clara Wilson, Emily Randall. And because of those 3 people, we were able to pass transformative legislation that had been stuck for a long time. So representation is important because this is the first time, really, I think a lot of people are seeing people who look like them. And second, because of 3 people, not even that many people, we're able to transform the things we were able to do. So it's important to have, because you need to have more people engaged. And the more people that were engaged, the better the policies will eventually be. And I think oftentimes, too, there is a disconnect between our political leaders and the folks who they serve, because systemically, again, it's not easy to become a legislator. It takes a lot of money. You have to have a lot of political capital already. And in order to play this game, you have to know the rules. So this is my first time ever running, not involved in politics ever before in the past, and we were able to win. And we won in a way that I thought was unique in the sense that not many people have done it before. No corporate PACs, all grassroots. I mean, I had like no endorsements from political establishment. I think the only one was Congresswoman Jayapal because she's dope. But everybody else basically supported my opponent, which is fine. But that kind of goes to show that despite having qualified, talented people, you don't get access to the same power. Your success is more of a based off of proximity to power than it is you yourself.
Right.
And when you get the same people in the legislature talking to the same folks, advocating for their same issues, that's why you see things that are important, but they never pass. So in the Washington State Legislature, about 3,000 to 4,000 bills get introduced in any given year, 3,000 or 4,000. Less than 10% get passed. So 200 or 300 usually get passed. Last year we had 480 something because we were more efficient with the majority, but less than 10% of the bills actually get passed. So oftentimes people think about politics as being right or wrong. That's actually not the case. It's making sure that your issue is worthy of being discussed, because people will always say, hey, I support your issue, I support your thing. But if they don't fight for it, it never happens. And that's what's been happening for so long. And I think that's one of the problems with the Democratic Party as well, is that we talk about working families, we talk about regressive tax structures and all these different things.
Right.
I didn't see anybody eager to drop tax bills besides me.
Right.
I dropped multiple tax bills and we, in fact, passed one. Yeah. So that's one of the things too, is that as the people who are voting for folks in office, we need to hold them accountable and making sure that they're actually doing things that reflect the values of the folks who live there.
Yeah, because the thing is, I mean, so like in my district, two pretty major things happen. Dave Riker had been my representative.
Yeah, and he's out.
Who's out. Yeah. Now Dr. Kim Shire got elected, which was amazing. But then state-wise,
Mona
Doss got elected over Joe Fain, who had been representing my district for a really long time.
Yeah.
And was, I think he was... leader, right?
The floor leader.
Yeah, floor leader.
Yeah, I mean, he was in leadership with that party.
Right, which, so that was like really wild. But the thing is, now I'm like, you know, it's obviously so exciting. It's like such a celebration, but then I'm like, okay, now you need to get shit done.
Yeah, let's do
like,
work.
I'm like, if let's I don't see some results, like serious results where we're seeing like things that actually, I know that there are reasons why they haven't been done in the past, but now it's less obvious why they wouldn't get, you know what I mean?
Like the barriers are lower now. So it feels like what's not happening then.
Yeah. So what are some of your goals for like this year, and what are you hoping to do?
I have a whole host of things. You know, so first I'm going one step back. So all the new members, we have a first year caucus. I don't know. We'll probably first term caucus at this point because it's our second year, but we text each other pretty regularly, and they're actually a pretty diverse group. You know, Emily Randall, Claire Wilson, myself.
Emily Mona. Seems so good. Yeah.
Emily. Emily is my legislative best friend. we're probably going to get an apartment together next year because she's that awesome. But we lean on each other a lot. And one of the things that people don't see after you become elected is there's a ton of pressure to conform, to toe the status quo, to tone yourself and moderate yourself down. There's an immense amount of pressure. I'm very privileged to be in a district that is very progressive. Like, I can honestly say whatever I think because it reflects the people in that district, right? Like, I supported Shama Sawant for King County, or I'm sorry, for Seattle City Council. And a lot of folks were like, that's, why would you do that? And I'm like, because it's the right thing to do. And I can, because my district supports that, but not everybody has that opportunity. And I think oftentimes people worry so much about getting reelected or staying in power that they then moderate themselves and tone themselves down. Very few people get in trouble for doing nothing, right? Like, you vote what the party tells you and you're good.
Right.
But if you're trying to stick your neck out and push progressive policies, that's when things get tricky. And people want you to fail. Like, there are people who are benefiting from the status quo and they want you to fail. There are people who want me to fail.
Mostly
right
people
now.
With a lot of money, I'm sure.
Mostly people who've already bought influence in the political process. And I'm talking Republicans and also Democrats as well.
Right, of course,
So when you get down there, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, like, almost on a daily basis, I was told to, hey, you should be careful about doing this. No, you shouldn't probably do that. That's too aggressive. And I even get that still now. But it's like, you know what? I don't actually care about getting reelected. I want to do a good job. And candidly, so I was lucky enough to introduce Senator Warren when she was in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, I don't think that I would have gotten that opportunity from being like toned down and moderate. Right. There's a lot to be had by pushing the progressive agenda.
Well, so, and do you think that's still true in this political environment
Just, it feels like you're what you're talking about, it feels very relevant to what we're seeing in the 2020 candidates where it's like,
yeah, no, I agree.
The moderate candidates are candidate like, we need to be getting,
more moderate.
Yeah, yeah, it just feels like the base is not there. No, like maybe in the past, like yeah, pre-Trump or whatever, like yeah, that would have been okay. But I just,
it's kind of
like
all out the window.
That's what I think.
My opinion. Well, so
you know, people are like, oh, don't you think that Senator Warren's a bit extreme? I was like, do you realize that Trump is the president right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, again, so when you're from a community that has been marginalized, when you're not used to being in power positions mm-hmm. of privilege, there's scarcity, right? Mm-hmm. So like you fight right. over scraps or mm-hmm. you're just afraid of losing what little you actually have. And I think that's kind of what's playing out, mm-hmm. especially for some of the progressive folks who are scared of Trump, but also think that we should moderate ourselves down, which I don't agree with at all. I think we should fight harder for what we need and what we believe in. But I think that's actually the case. If you're, you know, on the margins, like honestly, labor unions are kind of there as well. They're being constantly under attack right now. Low income or communities of color, folks like that who've historically been oppressed, they are afraid of losing whatever little that they actually have. And that's kind of the pressure to tone it down so you don't lose what you have. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, false. I think you should actually push harder. But
yeah,
I don't fault anybody for their ideology and their thought process, because the United States has shown that, hey, we may still be a little bit sexist. We might still be racist. You
just
know, we
just
elected,
a little bit.
We elected an openly white supremacist well, who is a misogynist.
Yeah. And, I mean, my biggest frustration after 2016 was that it felt like the country wanted more populist planks and strategies and
yeah.
out of the Democratic Party.
We didn't get it.
And that didn't come to the surface, even though Bernie was like in the top two yeah. and all this stuff, all these conversations about Medicare for All were already happening back yeah. in 2015, mm-hmm. 2016. And so for the party not to respond to that and be like, hey, actually, we're going to be really, really, I mean, we've always been pro-union, but like, you know, like really own mm-hmm. those like very populist, like an AOC, like kind of
yeah.
platform that well, feels right for the moment.
And that goes
you
back
know?
To representation at all levels. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking mm-hmm. all levels mm-hmm. from dog catcher to president, mm-hmm. right? And if you have people who are in charge and their job is to maintain the status quo because that's what they've been doing, mm-hmm. that's what they're going to advocate for and push.
Mm-hmm.
So unless there are more people willing to take up that mantle and take up that space, it's going to be very hard to do. So the biggest thing for me is not to get reelected or to get ever elected again. The goal for me is to empower leaders who can do the work and will do a good job and fight for the community. My job, in my mind, is to get so many good people in the right places that it doesn't matter if I ever get reelected again. So I endorsed, I think, 27 people, and every single one made it past to the general.
Mm-hmm.
All but one maybe will probably win their election. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even include the folks that we've helped get onto positions through appointments.
Right.
So for me, it's funny because this goes back to representation. That's my job. I think that's my goal, is to get more representation,
mm-hmm.
not to maintain power. It's to get power back to the people.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen very often, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you get to a position of power, oftentimes the journey there was not easy. So you want to stay there. Mine's actually the opposite. I want to leave as fast as possible, but get the right people in place so that
yeah.
you don't have to worry about leaving.
Well, and I think there's something to breaking barriers or whatever, like being the first
yeah.
elected whatever
person
it is.
Person of color in my district,
yeah.
first Vietnamese
For
person
example.
In the Senate.
Yeah, and that creates sort of like, oh, this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just the inspiration for other people.
And like, that's been the coolest part. I mean, like, honestly, I don't know, most folks, they probably know at this point because of the articles, but like, I grew up, you know, immigrant family,
mm-hmm.
Person of color. My father was in a car accident when I was a kid. We grew up on social services. We grew up on public health because we were very, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
I was a janitor in high school to help make ends meet. I was washing dishes in college. Mind you, I was student body president at the same time. So I'd be student body president at the school. And then at night, I'd go wash dishes to help pay for tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people told me that I can be a senator. Very few people told me that I'd be good enough to do whatever it is. Just because, you know, with that kind of background, your chances of success is very little. And sometimes if nobody tells you different, you start believing it as well. So unless you have those examples of representation in
right.
these key places, you mm-hmm. will never know that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's funny because before I ran for office, I was talking to Councilmember Lorena Gonzalez, and she's like, hey, don't fuck this up. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, because there's not many black and brown people here.
Yeah.
So if you fuck this up, it makes us all look bad. And I was like, oh, shit, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So if you look at how we campaigned.
But how did you get over that barrier? Because I think that's a lot of what happens with younger people that want to run for office. If you're a millennial, younger millennial, you know, there are all these things that you're talking about. There's financial barriers. Oh, yeah. There's where you came from, whatever. But there's also just like literally
the pressure.
Like I've sent out too many selfies into the world. Yeah. I've grown up on the internet. Like there's like literally so many reasons why someone thinks that they can't be a politician, in quotes. Yeah. Right. And
how do you, plenty of drunk
I dress this way. I like, you know what I mean? Like anything like that. So how do you think people could get over that hump?
You have to own it. Mm. So, I did a piece with NPR when session started and, I'm wearing like a Nike jacket and like no socks and some shoes. I dress like that normally. When I meet with the governor's office, I wear like Nikes, like Air Jordans, like a t-shirt. Because I want people to understand that what it means to be an elected official and a senator is a lot different than what it was before. And I think one of the biggest things is that we do have that self-doubt. We have that imposter syndrome. This is what it means to be a senator.
Right.
It's an old white guy with a nice suit on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in the Constitution that says an old white guy that's wearing a suit is the senator. So it's incumbent upon us to actually change that. But there's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of pressure there. I mean, when I first started, the first month and a half, people would ask me if I was Bob Hasegawa's LA, right? Like if I was a staffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, first off, why'd you guys pick the only other Asian guy?
Yeah, right?
I could be anybody's LA. Why is the Asian guy? That's part of the growing pains of changing an institution that is not necessarily meant for us.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends and I, and this is probably inappropriate and not politically smart to say out loud, but we have a term called MWG, mediocre white guy.
Mm.
So not all MWGs are white guys.
I think it's that's
come up on our
not,
pod before.
Right? That's a thing. Okay,
not
cool.
Exactly inflammatory in
perfect.
This room.
Yeah.
I have a therapist tell us that we couldn't talk that, so much
yeah, that
shit
we
about
couldn't judge
white men.
Well, we're not. I mean, this is just a statement of fact, right? So one of the things we talk about is whenever you have self-doubt and whenever you are worried about doing something, it's like, what would a mediocre white guy do?
Yeah,
yeah,
and
then, that's
and just do that.
Yeah, yeah. Give me the confidence of
a
mediocre
white guy.
Yeah,
I'm not, that's true. You know, saying all white guys are mediocre, but
yeah,
goddamn, they walk this earth in a different way.
But yeah, the expectations that they have just as like having that privilege, walking in the world with that privilege, like how would you act?
It's
a funny exercise.
The most glaring example of when I understood that I had positional power and positional privilege in the legislature. So for me, I'm always used to when you guys walk down a busy hall or a busy sidewalk, I usually am the one that gets out
of
the way. Do you guys do that? I don't know if you guys.
Yeah.
I had to force
myself. We're women.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's normal, right?
Yeah.
When I go down to Olympia, it's like I have a Superman suit on and I walk.
People
part.
Yeah.
Like they're like, that's a senator. Get out of his way. That's a senator. That's gonna. We went to Costco once to get snacks for our office. And as we were walking by, one of my staff members was like, made this frustrated look. And I was like, hey, what's going on? She's like, they're not getting out of your way. I'm like, we're not in Olympia.
We're at Costco. No one gets
out
of your
nobody
way.
Nobody gets out of your way at Costco. But that was one of the interesting things is when you first realize you have privilege is when like grown, wealthy white men are moving out of the way for me.
Right.
And that's when I first realized that, oh, wow, I am an actual senator making actual laws.
Yeah.
And people have to take this very seriously because it has ramifications beyond, you know, my sphere.
But I think the problem with like the MWGs of the world is that they expect people to get out of their way.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't recognize their privilege as privilege.
No,
so
no,
that's
no.
why they're so addicted to the status quo because they're like, this is
pretty
great.
Everything is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm absolutely positive that you're going to be this like big national figure because I know you're amazing. So that happens, people are going to start talking about humility with you, right? Mm-hmm. Or like with AOC, she could finally afford rent and then they were like complaining that she was talking about rent. You know what I mean? Like there's all these like, okay, you take one step forward and then it's like smack down of like, you know,
Yeah, that's a normal thing. I mean, what people also don't see is the hate mail that I get and like the death threats. I'll get invited onto conservative shows and I don't mind debating stuff, but the proportion of, you know, disturbing messages I get afterwards that my staff has to field is usually an indication of why I do or do not take them.
Hmm.
But you're right. The number of times I've been told that like, well, you're in a position of power, so obviously there is no oppression. I'm like, are you serious? Right. So oftentimes you have to have those tough conversations that, you know, you thought were just normal, right? Like I've had to explain to people before.
Oh, yeah.
Institutional racism.
Yeah.
And systemic oppression. And they're like, wait, what? I'm like, oh God, you're a Democrat and you don't know what this is.
Well, so, yeah,
you know, it's
kind
it's
of Seattle of too, though, or like the Northwest. It's like so much of that.
I call it faux aggressive. It's like they're progressive until they have to be progressive.
That's really good.
Yeah. And again, it's people's experiences. I grew up in a very different environment than other people. And I think that shaped my experiences and theirs did too. Mm-hmm. And having to bridge that gap sometimes can be uncomfortable as we've seen in our politics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes up a lot. I mean, we were just talking about housing and, like, you know, people that own homes that are seemingly, they think they're liberal, or, you know, people with, we talk about like trans rights and queer representation and stuff like that. People that think they're liberal that, you know, well, say these things that they're just like,
I mean, it's like any microaggression. But it's a lot of education, I guess.
It's a lot. Yeah. Well, and that's the hard part too is, so to give you an example, I used to say my name wrong on purpose. Because it's Nguyen or it's Nguyen. And I used to say Nguyen. Not only because the number of times people are like, well, what is the N there? I'm like, I know. But that's not how an N works in the English language. I'm like, I know. But stuff like that where, you know, you kind of have to maintain that fight. And one of my friends actually works in the city council involved in politics. And we had this conversation about just being tired. Right? Like, it gets tiring after a while to have to fight that fight all the time. That's why it's self-care is so important. But that's one of the things is you got to find allies because doing it by yourself, man, you're going to burn out so fast.
Okay. So your little squad, we're going to call it the Washington squad.
Squad.
TM. So what are you guys working on? Tell us more about what, cause there are so many things, right? Like I said, like there's pressure obviously from progressive side and then like to moderate or whatever, but like, I'm really curious kind of how would you prioritize these big topics? There's such huge, like big things that you could be working on. There's like guns, there's housing, there's transportation, there's family stuff, right? Like family leave and childcare, all these big, what are becoming more and more, you know, centralized, like I would say, because I feels like the party is pulling a little bit more left.
I mean, the world is pulling that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you guys kind of, how are you prioritizing those things and how do you feel?
So we all have our specific focuses. Emily and Randall does a lot of work on healthcare and disability rights. Claire Wilson does a lot in early education. Mm-hmm. Senator Lovelett and Senator Doss do a lot of like environmental issues as well. So it kind of depends on who the individual is and what committees they are. So me personally, I care very much about justice and equity issues. So you'll see some of those things come up. I'm going to work on a piece of legislation. So last year I helped I prime sponsored a bill that vacated marijuana convictions because I think the war on drugs is one of the most racist things that we've done in our history.
It passed in California, right? Is California?
I don't know. I think so.
Now they've vacated.
Yeah. So ours is vacated too.
Oh, in Washington State.
We passed it. I want to automatically vacate it. It just requires some money. But yes, we passed in Washington State. I have bills on a guaranteed basic income. I have a bill on wealth inequality. I'm doing a lot of things on the technology side as it relates to like equity issues. So artificial intelligence, data privacy, facial recognition stuff, even autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to really rethink how we do things in Washington State. And Washington State's kind of an incubator for a whole host of things that the national level can actually mimic. So kind of in those spaces, but you know, I'm also the vice chair of human services, which I absolutely love and adore is because you do things that impact regular, real people. And oftentimes when you are working in a space that doesn't have expensive lobbyists, the issue doesn't really become a thing and hardly ever does it become pushed to the point where you're passing legislation. But that's where I want to be because that's where you can do the most amount of good. So working with folks that are formerly incarcerated, making sure that we don't have youth solitary confinement, making sure that we support folks transitioning out of prison facilities so they don't recidivate. Those are the things that I care about as well that may not necessarily pop up too much on the radars of, say, for instance, media, but will help folks in our community tremendously. And it has ramifications, right? Like homelessness is, there's a lot of issues, obviously, surrounding homelessness. And it encompasses many facets, right? Like the whole Seattle is dying narrative, first off, is garbage, but people think that that's the right reason. No, even if we did the stupid things that is in that fake documentary, I don't know what you'd call it, it wouldn't actually alleviate homelessness, right? Like most of the folks who are homeless are actually transitory. it's a one-time health issue,
right?
Financial crisis. Their car broke down. They missed rent for a day or two, and they get evicted, and now they're homeless. So there are things that we can do to actually address the root causes of homelessness and really give people a chance to succeed long-term. I'm a big advocate for reforming what's called TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. My family was on TANF when we were growing up, and that is one of the ways that we can help working families keep their homes. I'm also a big advocate for the working families tax credit. It mirrors the earned income tax credit that we have at the national level, but basically puts money back into the pockets. And it's their money. It's, you know, a rebate off of taxes that they're already paying back into their pockets, so they can do things like, you know, pay for childcare, pay for car maintenance, or paying for the deposit on whatever rent. So for me, a lot of the stuff that I'm working on are systemic issues that I think helps build a society that's more fair and equitable. But people do different things. I know Senator Randall has a lot of stuff she's working on reproductive rights and healthcare and stuff like that. So kind of just depends. But you're going to see, if you look, I would bet you, first off, if you look at the number of bills that are passed with this majority that we have now versus in the past, you're going to see a lot more. And if you look at the issues that we're tackling, the ones that you mentioned, they weren't even part of the conversation before.
Right.
Capital gains wasn't even part of the conversation until last year in the legislature. And we're going to advocate and push for that now. Both chambers had a capital gains proposal. They were different. But the fact that we had proposals was the first time ever. And I'm going to advocate for the ones that I think are the best. But passing one went from, oh, that'd be great if we could do that eventually someday, to which one should we pass?
Right.
I was talking to folks about like emission standards for cars, making them more less carbon intensive and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, this is so hard. This is so hard. I was like, yo, man, I was just in Denmark. Seemed like they're handling it just fine. They're like, well, that's different. I'm like, it's only different because we're making it different.
Totally.
Like, that's the thing that people forget. Like, you've been so sensitized to doing it a certain way that when somebody brings up something that is actually a good idea but it's new, your initial reaction is visceral.
Yeah.
Right.
We talk about that all the time. Like, people just can't imagine a different way.
Because it's
so
hard.
They're like, no, that's too scary. I can't think about it.
Yeah. Being afraid of the unknown.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
and I keep bringing this back because I think it's pertinent. But like, I supported Senator Warren very early. I think I'm still the only state level representative.
I was actually kind of surprised that you, because I know you did the UW thing too, right?
Yeah,
like at UW. Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, that was like right after I contacted you. I think it was like the day after or something, and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy. I haven't seen
anybody do that.
Anyone really be doing that?
Like, right. And it really wasn't that crazy. Senator Warren's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very obvious and person to support.
To me, that's
all of our guests so far have been Warren stans.
Yeah. Warren heads.
A lot of Warren heads on this pod.
You can tell a lot by a leader based off of how their team operates. To give you an example, in the legislature, departments and agencies are allowed to suggest legislation, right? Like Bob Ferguson and Department of whatever, they're allowed in the governor's office, they're allowed to suggest policies that we help run. And so I talk to everybody, like dozens and dozens of departments who have a special bill that they want to help run. And usually what happens is they come to you, hey, we have this idea, we want you to run this bill, what do you think? And then they start the process and the conversation. Bob Ferguson comes in, he's like, hey, Senator, you just won like 24 hours ago. My team has already reached out to you, and we have some legislative priorities for next year that we thought that you might like. And he handed me two bills that he had already drafted, that he had already had like a one pager, like a design, like graphically designed, beautiful one pager.
Right.
And he's like, I've done the stakeholder meetings. All you need to do is sign and then run this bill. And I was like, oh shit, this guy's not messing around. Like, he's not just like, hey, I have this idea. Do you want to be part of it? He like did it so that way it was very easy to just take it and then go. Senator Warren's very similar. In fact, so I've talked to a bunch of the presidential candidates, which is also very weird. And when their staff reached out usually it's like, hey, we're having a photo op. Do you want to come? Uh-huh. Oh, hey, we're going to do a fundraiser here. Can you spend $1,000 to come?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, no, I'm good.
It's more like as part of the network of the DNC. Yep. That's Yeah.
But Senator Warren, what she did, she had her legislative staff come out a month or so in advance to meet with folks. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, Senator Nguyen, we've heard about you. We read that article about you in The Stranger. We thought that you'd be a good fit with the senator. Wanted to see if we can earn your support and like walk through the things that she cared about, the things that I cared about. And they're like, this makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn.
There's like a very methodical way that that team is going about getting allies. And it's not in a bad way. Like, I'm like saying like, ooh, they're like, you know, strategically pick. They're literally like winning people over with like in the most smart way that they possibly can. Like,
and it's not in the bar's not high.
It's not in a, it's not in like a super gross, savvy political way. Yeah, it's like in a real human way where you're like, oh, they like know that they need to reach out to these people and they just do it. And they do it in a very like human,
I think,
authentic way. Yeah, that you're, like, I'm very impressed by
what it is. It's like the authenticity of her and her whole vibe, you know. It's like versus like when you say methodical, that sounds more hawkish or something. Yeah. But it's
in a deliberate like.
It's intentional.
Yeah. It's intentional.
Intentional and thoughtful. I think what it is.
Intentional rather than methodical.
Yeah.
So. I've been very impressed with, I mean, I was impressed with her before, but then like I met with her team and talked to her senior officials and I was like, damn, you guys are not joking around. She's going to win Washington State. Like, I'll put money on that right now.
Well, how do you feel about the Bernie factor?
I supported Bernie in the past and I love Bernie as well. And I like that they're basically working together when they're on the debate stage. I'd be happy. And I will support anybody that's not Trump.
Right.
But, you know, she happens to be the one that I feel most aligned with. And in fact, it's because of the way that we were brought up. I grew up, we had some issues that we faced that caused us to have some trauma, but also some financial insecurities. She had a very similar story. Mm-hmm. She got into politics for a lot of the same reasons that I did. I was hanging out with her backstage and we chatted for a little bit. First off, which is weird. and like the number of times she was like, right, that's what I did. That's what we're doing. And I'm like, oh God, you're like, we're like one of the same, except for she's running for president and I'm not. But you know what I mean? Like, she really is able to. But
obviously, her ability to connect with people is a huge factor. Exactly. And, you know, and you're right. They seem very aligned and like it's very a positive personal relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've talked about is like, we kind of wish like people like in the media and also just like followers of like both would also play be very nice with each other. And it's like very hard, right?
It's very hard. You know what's interesting?
Because we're just so worried. We're just so like freaked out and like we just, you know, are scared.
Post-traumatic.
Yeah.
I think trauma. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brain science is very important to understand because a lot of the folks are actually younger. You know what's interesting is, again, like my politics are very much left of left, but I spend a lot of time and energy and effort talking to folks that I don't agree with. I probably spend more time talking to people that I don't agree with just to figure out and understand where they're coming from and why. And what's interesting, when we were in Denmark this past week, we had legislators from rural communities. And we talked about how bad policies impact low-income communities or how bad policies hurt this and hurt that. And so many of the conversations, if you interchanged, you know, whatever, low-income community or people of color or immigrants with farmers or with whatever, it was actually very similar. So it's kind of fascinating to see how much we actually have in common. My father-in-law is very conservative. He voted for Trump and he is in the NRA. Like, and he said he would have voted for Bernie if Bernie was the ticket. And I was like, first off, that sounds sexist. But second, that's also very fascinating. So it's kind of this continuum where it's not linear, right? Like, there are folks who have political ideologies, but really at the end of the day, they care about how this impacts them and their families and really who they trust. And it doesn't matter if you're progressive or conservative. It's a matter of if you will support what they believe will help them and their families.
And getting back to representation, I think also it's like who people feel like they can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Like how you're talking about you and Elizabeth Warren are like, you know, basically best buds or whatever.
She did send me a thank you note. That's pretty cool.
But you know what I mean? Like, people want to see themselves in this person. They don't want to see some, you know, political.
Yeah. Well, at least somebody that cares, right? Like, even if that person was smarter or whatever, like, just do they care?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, do they care about me? Do they care about my family? If push comes to shove, are they going to fight for me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we won. And we won by a lot with very little money. Mm-hmm. We got outspent 4-1. Again, had no endorsements really besides Congresswoman Jayapal. And we won by a significant margin. We even lost like one precinct south of West Seattle. I mean, that's like fairly significant.
Yeah.
And it was because I think people understood that I was angry just like they were angry. And we were here to do the work that I believed we needed for people. Mm-hmm. That's what we need. Nobody really cares about political party per se. They care about how this impacts them. Obviously, people have preconceived notions of what a Democrat is and what a Republican is. And they've identified that with their own values. But if that person were to come in and help them and their families, that's what they're going to vote for.
Right,
it isn't the D or the R or whatever. It's the person who is going to help them.
Right. Which is what I think why people are so kind of frustrated with the national party and like how it's been really hard, I think, to get through about income inequality and inequality in general and how that's led to this like real push for more. I mean, I say populist, but it's generally just like, you're right, like pocketbook, you know, healthcare. Why is healthcare the most important? Yeah. Why was that the number one topic that people wanted to talk about? Obviously, because it impacts them in so many personal, important ways. Impacts everybody. Right?
Yeah.
No, it's funny. Again, I keep bringing up Denmark because I was just there, but we were on the bus and there was like the Republicans and also the Democrats. And then the tour guide or whoever was speaking at that time was like, yeah, you know, in Denmark, we pay a lot in taxes. It's like 55%.
Yeah.
But that also means that we have public health care. It means that our education is guaranteed and paid for up until a PhD. It means we have infrastructure for transportation.
Yeah.
And we're also the happiest people in the world based off of all these studies. And I just like looked around and I was like, what? Yeah? Yeah? Everybody? Everybody hear that?
Well, so we've talked about this a lot, and we always talk about the distrust of government, like how, well, the reason why we can't have that kind of, you know, tax base and more people fund all these social programs and really they're like safety net programs is because for some reason people don't trust that the government will use their money correctly when in reality we already do give our money to the government and the government does use it correctly. But like, you know what I mean? Like there's just this like weird barrier of like, well, but we can't add more. Oh, but we can't
it can
do
never
it
be
again.
More than what it is now. Yeah. I already hate what it is now, even though I don't understand it.
Because if you look at like corporate influence in our politics, like that has a drastic ramification on what's happening right now. So it's always funny to me. People are like, oh, government's not that efficient. And I'm like, do you do realize that the large corporations are the one buying the politicians and putting them there?
Right.
This is not an accident. None of this is an accident. Like they want to have some discord and a little bit of chaos because then nothing happens because they've already paid for the legislation that they get right now. And I'm not saying all corporations are bad. Don't get me wrong, but the oil companies are and then the tobacco companies are. And there are certainly times where here's an example in the legislature, the lobbyists, they call themselves the third house. They have name tags called the third house. Right. So you have the House of Representatives, you have the Senate, and they call themselves the third house. Like they are part of
and
the
it's just like a
process.
Normal thing.
It's normal. Yeah. They wear name tags that say it.
Yeah.
The first time I saw that, I was like, what's the third house? They're like, oh, that's the lobbying corps. And I was like, no shit. You guys
like,
call yourself.
I don't think that's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I.
Oh, wow. Real cute.
Yeah. Real cool. Obviously corrupt.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened to me when I was passing legislation. So I passed legislation that some of the business community didn't like because it would have made development cost for them more expensive, but cheaper for everybody else. And I came out and in Olympia, you're allowed to pass notes to people on the floor so that you can pass the security guard notes and they'll take it to the floor. And I'm debating, literally on the floor, debating amendments. So I don't respond back. Plus, I wasn't going to respond back anyway. And I leave to go negotiate another bill. And this guy grabs me and he's like, hey, we were trying to send you notes and like get to you. And like, you didn't respond back to us. And it was a lobbyist. And I was like, oh, you know, I was looking up how to pass legislation and it didn't say anything about talking to lobbyists. So I just did it and then walked off. That's the level of corruption, I would say, is that they felt so entitled to the process where if they weren't consulted, they would be upset. And again, I didn't take corporate money. So I was just like, cool, man. Like I did what I thought was right for my people. And I still think it's right. Agnostic of what you think. Which we considered, right? Like there were certain things that we factored in to make sure that we weren't having any ancillary benefits or ancillary effects that were bad. But it was just funny that they were trying to talk to me like he was talking to the other folks that he's bought off. And I'm like, I don't work for you, bud.
Yeah.
Like I work for the people. Mm-hmm. And that's not normal, which is crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. AOC talks about that stuff too. Like
it's a thing.
She'll be like, oh yeah, like people expected me to do this thing and I'm not going to do it. And
they get
yeah.
mad.
And then people on social media are like, we didn't even know that happened. Like there's right. all this new information that no one had known about because it's like this shadowy like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I get in trouble all the time. So I did the podcast for the Seattle Times and talked about stuff. Folks are like, you shouldn't say that stuff. I'm yeah. like, say what stuff?
Yeah.
What stuff? What are you talking about?
Tell people what actually happens. Yeah. yeah.
No, it's oh, interesting.
And that's also points out the value of people who aren't entrenched in the political system getting the opportunity to represent people because well, it's like actual people representing actual right? people, and you can easily say what the fuck this is so corrupt when you're not entrenched in that yeah. system already.
Other people are like, no, this is normal.
Yeah. This exactly is nice.
Well, even so, one of the reasons why we worked so hard, I knew that coming in winning, they were going to say Joe's not going to be able to hit the ground running, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's obviously going to fail, he's too out there, too mm-hmm. loud. And we worked extra hard because I wanted to squash that notion very, very fast. So it's interesting because all these folks who were, you know, basically trying to get me to fail, I'm just like, I'm brand new to this. And I was arguably one of the more effective legislators last year. Mm-hmm. I was able to do things that people never do. I was on a rules committee, which is very rare for a first member. I helped negotiate the budget, which is very, I don't think ever happens for a first year member. And we passed transformative legislation. And I get that we had a majority, but we did things that other people said that we couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And I did it because it was the right thing to do, but also to prove a point is that this diversity and this breadth of experience is important for the whole legislative process. You know what's funny? The most, I think, talked about thing that my office did last year, bar none, like just the entire time, was the interior design of my office.
The Xbox.
The Xbox.
And the snacks, yeah. previously mentioned.
No, it's crazy. And one of the reasons why that was important, and that wasn't meant to be a statement, but I wanted the space to be inclusive, and I wanted to make sure that folks felt welcomed and open, invited to
so
our
office.
So
not a lot of taxidermy.
There's a lot of taxidermy down there, actually. Yeah, but not in our office. When you walk in, it felt like a sitting area. I gave my staff the big office. I took the small office, and people just freaked out.
Right.
Freaked out. Like it was, I even warned. So I have a new chief of staff. She's fantastic. And I warned her and I was like, hey, FYI, people are going to talk about our office because like the physical office mm-hmm. and like they're going to ask you questions and all these different things. She's like, what? I'm like, it's going to be a thing. I'm not saying that it's good or bad.
It's
I'm
like the sweatpants. Sweatpants are a thing.
It's just a thing. Yeah. The yoga pants, just a thing. And sure enough, the first person that came to visit
Google Docs,
just a thing. we've taught people how to use some of the software that we use. Like
it's not
going to be like implemented legislative wide, but that's part of having that diversity in the representation.
Yeah.
Right? Like people felt comfortable coming to my office to hang out with us and talk to us. I had interns, I had pages, I had members, I had stakeholders come and they would just hang out and they felt welcome. And we had good conversations about things, even people that I don't agree with. I'd have Republican members who came over and just kind of hung out and like we chatted about stuff.
Yeah, but like with representation, like I want to be represented by someone who knows what a Google Doc is.
Right.
Like, it freaks me out.
That just like makes it more obvious that there's too many old white guys in this. If no one knows how to use Google Docs, that is a scary scene.
It's resistant. So we use an app to schedule all of our meetings and it saves so much time. Like there's no... To me, there's no downside. Worst case scenario, if somebody doesn't know how to use an app, you can just schedule that one-off meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
And the pushback, even on that, they're like, well, I don't want anybody to have control of my calendar. I don't want to have somebody be able to pick the time. I'm like, cool, man. You know what? You do you. You guys do you. But the same way that I schedule my haircut, that's how you should be able to schedule an appointment with me as well. Like, I'm not here to do that.
I mean, obviously, it's you're improving efficiencies in government, which is like...
Unheard of.
A conservative fucking talking point. Yeah. Like, but it's like, you're like,
No, at a Republican.
Hey, talk about shared values here. Like, do you want the, you know?
Yeah, do you want the meeting or not?
Yeah, do you want to, like, this saves us all time. I had a Republican talk to me. He's like, you know what? We don't agree on a lot of things, but I love that you're so efficient and that you hate waste. And I was like, right?
There you go.
Yeah, because in 2019, everything is flip-flopped.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's weird.
We're the party of, like, patriotism and, like, and you know, yeah. Like, yeah, not being wasteful.
Not treason.
Right.
I do not.
Yeah, do you have any thoughts on impeachment? I mean, you know, as we wrap up.
Publicly called for impeachments for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that we're seeing now is just a validation of what we've all known. Mm-hmm. And the person that's sitting in the office is that he is a traitor to this country and is committing treason on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
This week has been
interesting.
Pretty bonkers, though.
And you know what's funny? That would have been a controversial statement like last week. But yeah. No. Like, literally, he's committing treason, folks.
Yeah.
Like, there is documented.
Yeah. And he keeps saying he did it.
I know. As if it makes it okay.
But I think that, I mean, that's just his style, right?
Yeah.
Is to say like, yeah, I did. And yeah,
I did.
What are you going to do about it?
You know, and here, one of the parting notes that I'll have for this conversation is, you know, oftentimes people will feel dejected because of the divisiveness and because of the gridlock and all the negative things that's happening. But what I mentioned before was really three people changed the entire dynamic of the legislature in Washington state. We can do that in the national level as well. So for as much vitriol that we're seeing from this Oval Office and what's going on nationally, it doesn't actually take that many people to transform our political process. And it takes us being involved and being engaged. But really, we can move the needle with a handful of folks. And we've seen that happen in Washington state. And I think that can happen at the national level as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I hope so. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a positive note to leave on.
Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, so every episode we give a rating for our topic.
Okay.
And we usually use like some kind, like our scale is 0 to 5 somethings.
Mm-hmm.
So usually relevant to the topic.
So 0 to 5 something, 0 to 5 votes obviously would be
that's
the most.
That's an easy one.
Votes is easy.
Most obvious.
Yeah.
Is there anything more fun we
0 to 5 mediocre white guys?
Yeah. That's MWGs. A good one. MWGs.
0 to 5 MWGs.
Yeah. Because I don't want people to confuse. I don't think all white guys are mediocre. I'm just saying that like there's definitely a trend.
But
I
there
mean,
are.
Katie and I will say that because
there
we're not
are
many
mediocre white men in the world.
They do exist. And they have tendencies. I'll point them out, my wife and I. Because there's like certain tendencies that I'll notice that people have.
Uh-huh.
For instance, not being aware of space. Right, so like I'll have a conversation with somebody and then there's somebody behind them that wants to have a conversation with me. And most folks see that, they'll cut it short, they'll move on. A mediocre white guy just takes up that space and like doesn't leave.
You're
even
preaching
if you
to
start,
the choir over here.
You know
here.
What I mean? It's crazy. Like yeah, I mean, you can
physically
document.
Physically on my train, I know exactly.
Manspreading. Yeah.
There's like a lot of things.
Common thing. That's not really specific to white men, I would say.
No. The manspreading?
Yeah, just like taking up too much space in public.
No, physical space. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like mental, emotional, psychological space.
Yeah, I don't
disagree
with you.
They just won't shut up, you know?
Yeah, I don't disagree. You know what's funny? So I was at the Riveter and talking about women in leadership.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, hey, what are you as an ally? What can you do to help support women? I was like, shut my mouth. And then I just like left it at that. And they're just like, what? I'm like, yeah, just like they're great. I'm the only.
Generally, male. That is like such a rule, though, like that men will like over. It's like
overstep.
You're like, really, all I'm looking for is like space.
Just
like,
space. Yeah. Let me do my thing.
Yeah. I think people of color are like it's like the same thing. It's like the space issue.
Yeah.
Of,
I'm just
like,
I'm
who's taking
there.
Up space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am the only male on the feminist caucus. I'm just going to put that out there.
Nice.
Yeah, I was invited to
you know what's weird? There are like there's such a thing with men calling themselves feminists. Like there's a real disconnect there for a lot of men.
Oh,
and
like
I'm
they don't
like,
want to?
What's the issue here? Yeah. Like they're like, well,
like
I
it's still
I
like
wouldn't.
A weird...
Yeah. They're like, but I can't be a feminist.
It's almost like they're treating it like a negative thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I would never call myself, I don't know, whatever. Asian, like not being Asian, calling myself Asian. Like feminist is not like a.
Yeah. Anyone can like, be one. In
anybody
fact,
can be
hopefully
one.
Hopefully more people can, I would hope, but you know,
I mean, that's
it's like
the goal.
How many people are on the feminist caucus?
All the Democratic women.
Oh, yeah.
And then me.
And then literally, see, then that's you. What it, that's just me. I mean, that's case in point.
Yeah, why wouldn't all the Democratic men also
case in point.
Well, I was invited. Not everybody was invited.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay, it's I an invite.
It. Yeah. I think you have to have a history of support and allyship.
Invite only situation. Yeah, that's
well,
smart.
Well, because it has to be a
that's
safe
smart.
Space.
Yeah, that's smart.
The conversations that you do have with people, mm-hmm. sometimes you need to have that safe space, like what I was saying before, because it gets tiring. And for me, if not for the first year squad, we hang out. We had dinner every single night. We text each other every single day. And we still text each other every single day. And we would hang out in my office on Thursday nights. And we would just close a door and then vent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you didn't do that, you would go crazy. Yeah. So well, you need to have that space.
The fact that people were outraged over Mona Doss saying that there were microaggressions happening. And that I was like, obviously there are tons of microaggressions happening all the time. Not only in the world, but obviously in a government body. Like, what is shocking about it?
Also,
statement?
Why
like,
would you be outraged? Like,
well, it was funny. The Republicans
that was bonkers.
The Republicans were mad, and people pointed out though, like, hey, you guys,
because they don't like
comments.
Being called racist or sexist, or anything.
Right? And they wanted to put it back on the Democrats as much as possible. And it was like, you do realize your members say these things on the floor on TV. So if you really want to be angry, we can pull up the tape.
Yeah.
So your fake outrage doesn't really help.
Roll
anybody.
The tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Final rating.
Yeah. Let's do our rating.
Okay.
Final rating for representation, which I think I know what the ratings will be because
this one's kind of. Am I giving it? Do you give it?
We all give a rating.
Okay.
Yeah. So how you're feeling about? We could rate it like how you're feeling about the state of representation right now in government. Yeah.
Usually our reviews are sort of because our topics are so like large scale. Our reviews are like. You know, I feel this way about the current state of it, but the concept of representation is a 5, obviously.
Obviously, we love representation, but like, how is it going?
Yeah.
Basically.
I think that right now in the state, we're probably at like a 3, but that's just the fact that we've finally started talking about it and having these conversations. Mm. So I'm very positive that we're going to increase in the next couple of years.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the concept of representation obviously is 5 out of 5 mediocre white guys.
Yep. That's a pretty strong scale.
That's a very strong, group of MWGs. There are 5 of them.
Yeah.
You better move out of the way. Yeah. The concept of representation, obviously, we all want to see ourselves represented. We all want to, well, not all of us, I guess that's the issue. That knocks it down to like a 4, maybe.
Because
not everybody wants everybody to be represented. No. But the fact that like you were saying, that, you know, having 3 people out of the legislative body change
the whole thing,
just the created an entire thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That to me is really positive and shows the power of representation, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, 5 out of 5 for me.
Awesome.
Yeah, I say 4 out of 5. And I hope that you get elected many more times, even though
you're
working so hard
like,
against
don't
it.
Even care.
No, I mean, it's weird because I don't want to sound flip, but it's also like that's not the goal.
No, I mean,
like,
that's
the goal is to get representation.
Love it.
More politicians should be like that. You know, it's not about you per se.
I know.
And it will increase like people's feeling of representation and also want to vote more and be involved in government more,
which we saw happen.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time.
All right.
Bye.
If you have something to get off your chest, email us at rantandreviewpod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 805-635-RANT. That's 805-635-7268.
If you like Rant and Review, and we know you do, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
Bye.